Command, stand by for the snow show.
Initialize sequence now.
The snow show. Tom Freaky and Leon Littlebird.
We're now in the approach phase. Everything looking good.
Initiate snow show sequence.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Snow show.
Engage. Yeah, well, let's do another Colorado snow show.
Yep.
It's a podcast that happens every once in a while when we get around to it.
When we get inspired, and it doesn't take much to inspire us these days. It's pretty amazing.
And what's amazing are some of the friends that we get to join us on the podcast that inspire us and keep us going. Keep
well,
us
like our buddy Craig
more.
Simpson. Craig, welcome to the show, man.
Well, thanks. I'm happy to be your latest inspiration.
Well, I see you drive by my house almost every day. So
every day. at least twice a day.
And your cool new car. I dig your new car.
Hey, thanks, man.
Ooh, yeah. What do you have?
I haven't thrown any snowballs at you as you go by because there's no snow. So,
that's a good point. You could throw anything at me. You could throw, I don't know if you have any, like, rubber chickens or...
I'm completely out of rubber chickens. But, you know, Tom and I were reflecting the other day on... And in fact, I just got a video from my stepson. They were skiing in Erskine Bowl, and it was like, man, I remember that day we did a snowcat tour.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
And
the KAT tour, Keystone Adventure Tours.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were doing the snow show, weren't we?
Yes, we were.
We were recording the old radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I remember we had pretty good snow that day, too.
We did have good snow that day, and I remember you... skiing it better than I did.
Well, you know, it's easier for me to ski than it is to walk.
Now, was that the tour where Duke Bradford was with us?
Yeah, Duke was with us.
Yeah, okay. Because I just always give him shit because Duke took a digger on that one run.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And then I wanted to get over on that Taos Chute, you know, that real steep part that was, you know, but we didn't get that far.
No, not quite.
I wanted to get in there. That looked good.
Didn't we drop into Independence,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm. We absolutely did.
Yeah, that was
We got the full-on tour back there. That was pretty impressive before any of it was open, which is now
Lift
easily accessed.
Yeah, it's amazing going up there now. And, I mean, geez, guys, you know, I'm a former ski patrol director up there. And then when I go up there on the new lift, I'm like, where am I? I spent so many hours of my life up there, and then, you know, just with the
lift. It feels different,
there,
doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
That's how Tucker is at Copper, too. You know, now that Three Bears is there and they have a lift, and you go up, and it's not like when we hiked and went to Snowcat. You know, you get up there, and it's like, now, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, where's the taco? You know, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. It becomes lift accessed, and, well, that's why God invented lifts.
Well, yeah.
So we won't have to hike.
Right.
Exactly.
And, you know, I worked on that Bourbon Bowl project years and years and years and years, walking the trail and the lift line and all of that stuff and how we were going to widen Jane's Journey out of the bottom of it and how that access is. And to see it come to fruition was... it's pretty cool. I mean, it was a big white space.
How many years was that in the works?
Oh, geez, Tom. I mean, it's got to be at least, I'm going to say, 10 to 15 years.
Okay.
Wow.
You know,
it goes back to probably the 90s as far as development and planning and getting it all ready to go.
Yeah, it goes back to when I was like 4 feet tall.
Just a wee lad.
And now you're 5 feet tall. So
And the snowdrifts still go over your head.
Yeah.
Well, you had a great career as ski patrol director at Keystone. Tell us how you worked your way up to that lead position.
You know, I it's kind of funny. So, I mean, I moved up here in 91. And when I was a little kid, when I was actually like 2 feet tall.
Kid.
Yeah, people would ask me, what do you want to be? And this is going to sound really stupid, but my answer was, I want to be an ambulance.
Not an ambulance driver.
Nope.
Not an attendant.
I want to be an ambulance.
The ambulance.
I want to be an ambulance.
All right.
Okay.
And then I grew up, fortunately, in Colorado and had the great fortune of learning how to ski and sail. Since a very young man, like 3 years old. And I tried really hard not to be here, and then I just said, you know what, I know exactly what I want to do. So I came up here. I actually became a ski instructor for a little bit, and then I just followed my dream and dropped into a ski patrol uniform, went to Colorado Mountain College, got all the stuff I needed to get, and I could ski, so they hired me, and it just fit like a glove, just absolutely fit like a glove.
Didn't you work with Rich LaGuardia back in the day?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, my career took off pretty quick there. You know what actually really made my career, which I still tell people this. So my second year of ski patrol, I blew my knee, my left knee, for the first time. For the first time.
The premier break, yeah.
Yeah. Someday we should do like a Summit County wide photograph from the knees down, just the knees of Summit County.
Yeah. But, with all the scars and damages.
Yeah.
And just have people ID the knees. Who do these belong to?
Yeah. Or have them guess.
Yeah.
We could do a bingo card.
Ooh, there's a game for the tiki bar this summer.
There you go.
I think so.
Yeah. Whose knees are these?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, that landed me in patrol dispatch pretty much for the rest of the season. And that's where I was so central to the entire operation of Keystone, that really launched, you know, the contacts, the understanding, the operations, the timing, the weather, the everything that it took, the different departments, you know, everything from Keystone Emergency Services to snowmaking to lift maintenance to ski patrol to all of that. So that really launched my desire. I don't want to brag too much, but that year I was in dispatch, I actually won Patroller of the Year.
Wow.
So I must have been doing something right.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
So there's a ski patroller name that just popped into my head that's like, I don't know why, but Tom Festa.
Oh, that guy. Oh, man.
That's the response everybody gets. You mentioned that name, and oh, man.
What a character.
Holy cow.
Boy, did he have a nice house, though.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's up on the lake up there. It's kind of hidden, you know, up above Willowbrook. And
I helped build it.
Did you?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Right on that lake. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's Bootlegger Lake. And me and four other guys built that house. And if you go to that house today, there's still a plaque over the garage. It says Robert A. Martin Contracting, and then all of our names are on
there. Oh, cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've done weddings and baptisms and stuff at that house.
Yeah.
You know, and ceremonies. The lake is right there.
Yep.
So it's perfect. It's just one of, and nobody knows it's there because it's kind of hidden.
No, it's the old Bootlegger Lake.
Yeah.
And
nobody knows there's a lake up there.
No. Nope. And the old cook shack.
Yep.
Is right around the corner from it. And, Tom is, I was still a ski instructor, and Tom was such a character, and I met him in his patrol uniform, and just his energy, and I mean, the guy just,
he was larger than life.
Yes.
He could fill a room.
Absolutely.
Much less a summit area, you know, and that was a moment. Here's another Tom story. I don't know if you guys want me to keep going on Tom.
But oh, absolutely.
Yeah, here's another Tom story. So he was my mentor when I was a rookie. So keep in mind, as a rookie, you're not allowed to wear red.
Right.
You got to cover the red up until you earn it. And Tom just liked me for some reason. I think I worked hard, and he could see my energy for it. And
once you could ski.
Yeah, he could ski. Yeah, he could. But yeah, he one day heading up North Peak early morning, which for ski patrol at that time was, you know, you're riding Santiago lift at North Peak at like 7:15, 7:30.
Yep.
It was one of those spring days where, you know, it had just snowed. The glitter coming off the snow was just remarkable.
Perfect.
And Tom looked over at me and he said, "Hey, man, I think you might run this place someday." And at the time, I was
a rookie.
I was like 20. And so, yeah.
Cool. Wow.
So I did.
Yeah, he was the prophet.
Yeah,
he prophesied your career.
First time I met him was when the Outback Bowls first opened.
Yep.
And they had a media preview, and I was working in Denver and Colorado Springs radio at the time. And for the media preview, they had a helicopter come in, so you didn't have to ride the chairlift or do the hike.
Yep.
And you got a helicopter ride to the top of the Outback, and you could do the North Pole or South Pole. Helicopter would come down and get you, take you back up, and let you do the other side that you didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Festa was a part of that, just kind of corralling the people and showing people where to go. And I was so attracted to his energy. Just an amazing guy. Then when I moved up here, it's like, oh, my God, you.
Yeah.
He was still doing it. So cool.
So yeah. you know who else had started out as a ski instructor, became a patroller, and then found a bigger career is Alan Hensroth.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
At Yay Basin. I mean, I knew him as his instructor. I knew him as a patroller.
Yep.
And now he's, you know, COO of Yay Basin.
That guy, Alan is such an icon.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, is not just for his career and what he's done with it, but his the way he does it.
Yeah.
Because at the end of my career at Keystone, I went to the basin for a year before I realized I was too old to ski patrol at the basin. Because ski patrolling at the basin is hard. And all credit to everybody that works up there, but all credit to that team. It's a challenging piece of earth.
Yeah, it is.
To patrol. And
well, so much above tree line, and that alone.
Oh, just steep stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I could probably count on both hands how many days weren't just a whiteout during avalanche, you know, control and things like that. But I would show up in the morning, and I've had the privilege of knowing Hensroth and his family for a long time. We've been rafting together and things like that. But I would show up in the morning, and once again, you have to show up early. And there's Alan Hensroth, the top guy at the basin, out there shoveling the plaza.
Absolutely.
Right next to his employees, or parking cars.
Yeah.
You know, when I was
doing all that stuff,
doing the training for the ski school there, I had obviously show up early. Same thing, you know, because we had meetings and stuff to do. And there'd be Alan picking up trash with a bag out there picking up. It's like, you want to work for the guy because he does every job.
Yeah. He even runs a weed whacker getting the lift ready for opening day.
Yep.
Yeah, this year.
Well, let's go back to Keystone on Ski Patrol. There was a moment in time there that a lot of drivers on the I-70 corridor saw your face.
Oh, when I was on the billboard?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
A big marketing campaign.
Yeah, that was the marketing campaign actually for the Keystone Adventure Tours and Keystone in general. And it actually made it into Ski Magazine. So it was like page 30.
Well, still.
Yeah.
In print.
Yep.
How cool was that?
Yeah.
How many autographs do you have to sign?
Well, it was pretty much just my staff that were like, "Oh, you're so cool, sign this." But yeah, I was in Ski Magazine and on those billboards, and you know, it's just
just seems like there was a lot of other publicity material going along with that too. That there was some print pamphlets and things that were. It's like, oh, there's Craig.
all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, me and my family. We were printed on all the keys to every single hotel access. We were all, I think we're still there. It's, I still see those pictures around, but I ended up being lucky enough to, have twin daughters and taught them to ski really early. So anyone that wanted to take a picture of cute little girls that could ski and their mom, You know,
well, the whole family's photogenic.
Well,
that's what it comes down to.
Thank God for Allison. Yes.
Yeah. Thank God for her. I'm not sure what happened to me, but yeah. Yeah. Thank God for her. But yeah, so we did that, and it was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Know? I really enjoyed my time there.
And those little girl skiers became really good rugby players too.
Logan.
Yeah.
Well, McKenna went into gymnastics.
Oh, she, that's right.
She did play rugby, but her passion was scaring the hell out of her dad and her mom, mostly her dad. And then, Logan, played for the Summit High School women's rugby team. And obviously, they've had remarkable success.
Well, they're the most successful high school rugby team of all time, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Yeah.
They're
national champions.
Over and over and over.
Every year.
Yeah, just remarkable. And so that was really fun. And, you know, a lot of credit to Carl Barth, who's their coach.
Yep.
And a teacher at SHS. The way he does it, the way he recruits that team, the way he gets the older players to mentor the younger players, the way that he rugby in general is a cool sport. I played it for a little while really poorly. I have a funny story about that. But the way he builds different teams, he recruits them, he brings these girls up, he makes it very clear that you're going to be more than just an athlete. You're going to do well at school. You're going to be on this team. You're going to be a good person. You're going to be everything that it takes to be, you know, to play on this rugby team. And I just have so much respect for that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It is really cool.
That's a lot of what Team Summit goes along those lines, too. Just it's just gratifying to see an organization that has that support for the participants and watch them excel.
Mm-hmm. Well, our young skiers this year did really well.
Yeah.
We're producing some really hot skiers. And, of course, we have a couple of Colorado kids that have done well skiing. There's those girls from Vail.
Oh, those girls.
Oh, man.
Lindsay and Michaela. Michaela just won 109 and walked away with a slalom gold. Well, there's only 9 slalom races this year. She won 8 of them.
Wow.
And the one she didn't win, she was second.
That.
So, yeah. And this last race, it's in Aerie, Sweden, she won by almost a second.
Wow.
It's incredible.
The times were falling and falling, and the girls are getting faster and faster, in the second run. Yeah. And then Michaela dusts them. And it's flawless. Her secret's real simple. She never resists.
Yeah.
She never resists.
Go with the flow.
She just goes.
She's phenomenal. And I assume maybe you've had a chance to be in proximity of her.
Skied with her.
Yeah, see, there you go.
I had my foot on the gas pedal the entire time.
Good luck.
Yeah, and she was moving away from me. I was just going as fast as I could make them go. And she was just, out for a ski.
Yeah, just making it look like nothing.
Huh. We got to ski with Peekaboo Street.
Oh, yeah.
At Copper. That was fun.
On the race course.
Yeah. Speaking of just pulling away from us.
Peekaboo still has jets.
There she goes.
She still has jets.
She kind of.
See you later, Peek.
Left us behind.
We used to do the women's pro tour at Keystone.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
And down Last Hoot there. And there were a couple times I was patrolling that course, take care of competitors if they needed it. And, I'll tell you what. There's a big difference between the way a ski patroller tunes his skis or her skis.
Oh, big difference.
And those women that were on that course. I was literally starfishing down the course, trying to stay on my feet. And they were coming through those gates.
Arcing. Ah,
yeah, it's unreal.
If you want to see how sharp a World Cup ski is, look at Alexander Almakilda. It was his downhill ski that hit the back of his leg and severed his leg, and I don't know if he'll race again.
Man.
He raced this year a couple races, but I don't know if he'll come back next year now.
Wow.
And that's because the ski was so sharp. I mean, it severed him from the back of his knee down to his ankle.
Jeez.
And so, I mean, you could shave with those skis.
Yeah. Probably better than the shaver I used to.
Well, you know, that I've always thought it was really cool that your passion for sailing was something. You know, you got to really embrace many good years of skiing. And then the move over to sailing, you know, to the marina here in Dillon.
Yeah, and which is kind of funny. Let me go back to that rugby story real quick.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, okay.
So when I was in college at Mesa State, now it's Mesa University, but I was dormed with just a bunch of athletes. I was a swimmer. They were baseball players. They were football players. They were, you know, whatever. And one day we were like, we should play rugby because we knew a guy who was a coach. And so he tried to coach us. He got us a game, which was against the Fort Lewis women's B team. And they wiped the frickin' field with us. We thought we were so cool. And these women just took us to task.
I have a similar story. So, you know, I went to Regis, and when it was an all-boys prep school in North Denver, you know, on the Regis College campus.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of the Jesuits were from the East Coast, and there were no soccer teams here back in the 60s. This is 1964. Okay, so there weren't any high school soccer teams at all. And so they wanted us to have a soccer team. So we were learning to play soccer. And, you know, I had to be the goalie because I couldn't stop using my hands. Right? If the ball would go by me, I'd reach up and catch it. Right?
Yeah.
You know, and so I was playing goalie. And our first soccer team we played was the boys' penitentiary. And they didn't care. They didn't care about winning. They just had fun beating the shit out of us.
Yeah,
you know?
No kidding.
One of them stomped on my hand. You know, I landed and grabbed the ball and had my hand on. He just came, cleated my hand. Mm-hmm. You know, and
nice.
Yeah. And I was like, soccer's not for me. I'll go back to ski racing.
Yeah, you probably get stepped on less.
Back in those days, we were chasing bamboo, though.
Yep.
And that bamboo slap could leave some marks on you.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
And even worse was trying to take the bamboo up the lift, you know, to set the course. Those bundles of bamboo and...
I feel you. I feel you, bro.
Were you talking about that caught a lift tower? With
Corky McDonald hit copper.
Oh, he was on the chair?
Yeah. Oh. And I was right behind him, and he turned around to say something and clipped the chair, and foul, boom, and he landed underneath the bamboo. Yeah. Corky was tough as nails, though, so he didn't get hurt.
Yeah. He must have been.
Yeah.
So, hey, thanks for checking out the Colorado Snow Show podcast. You're wondering, when are they going to start talking about snow? Where's all the snow? I say, oh, that's okay. We've been going through that all season. Where's all the snow? It's been one of those seasons.
And this week, although today's it's a little crisp. It's only about 32 degrees out there today and a little bit kind of overcast. But we're supposed to have a heat wave, record-breaking heat wave this week. Yeah. Denver's going to set new records. It's just been the weirdest winter ever.
So people are holding out for, maybe April. Maybe we'll get that big snowstorm in April.
Well, I mean...
It can happen.
Yeah, okay.
It can. And,
yeah,
I mean,
it has.
We've lived through it.
Yeah.
The last time a winter like this happened, 2002, 2003. And, you know, once again, it's like everybody did okay with what we had, but then it snowed 7 feet in a week.
Right. Yeah.
At the end of April.
Yeah.
Remember when they were saying how long it was going to take the reservoir to fill back up?
Yeah.
And then it snowed so much that it was way ahead of prediction.
Right.
It started filling up right away.
Yeah, I think the next winter, too, is a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Yep.
That could happen next year again.
Yeah.
And, you know, my favorite May snowstorm is Mo Dixon, you know, goes back to Washington after he's done playing his gigs here. And then that year, he got on his motorcycle and rode back out here. So he's on his motorcycle, and it's May, and it's snowing so much he can't ride his motorcycle. So we went to the basin, It was 2018. It was May 18th. And there was 18 inches of fresh. It enclosed I-70, so there was nobody there but us.
Ah, there you go.
And we started at 9 in the morning, and at 2 in the afternoon, we're still making fresh tracks.
Oh, wow.
It was one of the premier ski days, May 18th. So it can happen.
It has happened in the past.
It can. And I we all have a lot of experience with weather and how it kind of it tends to work in equilibrium, right?
Yeah.
And you know, things are so kind of out of they're just so offset right now. At some point it's gonna equalize. It's just a matter of when that's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And obviously for my current profession at the marina, we would love to see waterfall from the sky at this point pretty much in any form.
Yeah.
So moving ahead, I'm sure you guys are looking at the water levels along with Denver water and just anticipating what could be a worst case scenario. What would that be like?
This year, under a dry scenario, we could be as far down as 50 feet.
Mm.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it is a reservoir.
Yeah.
So it's their water, but
What did it get down to in the 01, 02?
I think it was like 58 or 62 feet down.
Okay.
Yeah. And we were just looking at pictures for those who are listening to us. And, I mean, the marina still operated, but it just took on a different shape.
You know what I remember about the summer of 2002 is that every afternoon there'd be these whirlwinds blowing up Main Street Frisco of dust.
Mm.
You know, just the bottom of the lake coming up in dust form. And we had dust storms. It was kind of weird.
Yeah. I thought it was cool being able to walk on the whole old highway going into what was usually underwater and then seeing intact culverts in some of the areas of the roads. Like, wow, this road is totally usable after how many decades underwater?
Well, you could still see the stripes down the middle of it.
Right, road stripes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm the only one in this that remembers before the lake was here.
You were actually here.
Because I was 12 years old when they built the dam. So, you know, I spent time in the old town of Dillon, and my dad knew everybody in town. And so I have real vivid memories of what it was like in those roads, you know. So it was kind of cool. But my favorite thing that happened was that winter when the lake was so low, that carpenter built the steeple with the cross on it, put it up, and said the old town of Dillon was coming up. And I started telling people at gigs that I'm going to be leading walking tours through the old town of Dillon. And
oh, that was awesome.
That was a hoot.
Yeah.
That was one of the best goons ever, wasn't it?
Oh, I love stuff like that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, during COVID, when the world went quiet, I don't know if you recall, but somebody built a
Water creature.
Yeah, the big. Yeah.
Loch Ness.
Loch Ness. Yeah,
it had a name though. Was not Dillon Ness. Was it Dilly?
Dilly.
Okay.
Yeah, Dilly. The
instead of Nessie.
Instead of Nessie, it was Dilly. The Loch Ness.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I remember pulling in and looking, and I'm like, "Is that a what the?"
I've been here a long time. I've never seen that.
It's pretty funny.
Well, and usually the reservoir gets frozen over enough for activities like some cross-country skiing. And there's been some lake loops that you guys have definitely taken care of over the past years at the marina. And that never happened this year.
Nah, we were just, you know, that stuff requires equipment to go out there.
Mm-hmm.
Either a side-by-side towing a groomer behind it, or snowmobiles with rollers, things like that. We never really felt confident enough to be able to take machinery out there. Although, they did just put the ice clock out there.
Yes. By hand, though.
No, they actually brought in one of their powder sleds.
Oh, wow, they did. Okay.
Which weigh a whole bunch less than the utility ones that we have. And so they put it out there, and you know, the other big factor for us is there's this big fissure coming from Robert's Tunnel kind of over towards us, and then it kind of connects to the dam. And I've actually seen that thing opening up and reclosing.
Well, there's a big crack there right now.
Yep. It's just the two plates.
Remember, Tom, I was telling you that that's where that current runs.
The channel from the Snake River.
Yeah.
So we just took the safe side. The measurements right now, I mean, as I'm looking out the window, there's people ice fishing out there, but the measurements that we took before the clock went out, we were showing about 16 close to in Dillon Bay. Further you go out, we were still seeing double digits, so, you know, everything was over 10. So we were less nervous to put that clock out there. But.
So the actual ice sheet level will vary during the winter as well, depending on the water level and reservoir. It obviously is going to go down before it comes up.
Mm-hmm. And sunlight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How much did you see that settle this year?
The lake?
The ice sheet itself.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can, from where I'm sitting, I can actually see it. If you look at the shores, you can see that it's the water levels are still receding, and it's interesting, even when I have time to listen to the ice, you can hear it kind of, the water goes down, and then you could hear these big, like, you know, these big ice noises that it's kind of like, whoa.
Be fun to record those noises.
I was just going
to
say, somebody got to put that on a record.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah, it sounds like Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah, it's bizarre sounds.
It is.
Yeah. And it's not like one sound. It's many different kind of, and it actually sometimes moans and groans.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, kind of, you know, it's really strange. It's cool.
It is cool. But, you know, this year, like Georgetown Lake, last time I saw it, it's already thawed.
Oh, yeah. That's wide open.
And then normally in Georgetown, they run the cars out there and do the ice training. And, and that lake didn't get that frozen this year.
No. And that's the biggest difference I've seen this year is, you know, the lack of snowfall has at least in the valleys and where we live, we haven't seen a whole lot. But the temperatures... That's the part that
warmest winter on record.
Yeah,
in Colorado,
crazy.
That's I think that's been the thing. And you know, you and I live on a dirt road, so we've been just stuck in this perpetual mud season.
Yeah, I'm on a dirt road as well.
And the thing I like is I haven't had to shovel out my stairs because you know how my stairs are situated. The wind just packs it in there. If we get 8 inches of snow, I'm shoveling 3 feet out of that to get out it to my car, you know. So, but I haven't, I think I've shoveled 4 times. All winter.
Yeah. The last couple of storms that come through and drop like 2 or 3 inches, I refuse to pick up the shovel. It's going to melt.
It did. By the time you got home from the station, it was gone.
It's gone. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
It almost becomes like an experiment. Like I'm tempted to go out there.
Yeah.
But let's just see if it melts. But yeah, it's called decular oscillation.
Decular oscillation.
Yeah, so...
All right, children, get your notebooks out. Write this down.
I'm decentralizing my occipital modulation, but...
Only if you anticipate.
Only.
You right.
Know. You're right.
Yeah,
right.
That's a good point.
In case you're wondering, you might be able to hear in the background.
We're in the workshop.
we're hanging out at the Dillon Marina, looking at the ice on Lake Dillon and the cold gray sky outside. But inside, doing some work. What are you guys working on today?
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we're working it. So we are repowering one of our rental pontoon boats with a Yamaha. Evan Rude stopped making outboard motors. So we're repowering it with a Yamaha motor.
Yeah, you can hear it. There it is.
and currently, sometimes in big waves, that front door on a pontoon boat can take a wave to the point where it damages it. So we're trying to also reinforce the front door on one of these pontoons.
Just hammering away, making sure the rental fleet is up to par for when the season starts.
Yeah.
So talk about your rental fleet. How many boats you have?
What do we have? I think we have 35.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Really?
That includes 4 sailboats. But yeah, most of our rental fleet is pontoons, everywhere from 8 foot to, we have a 27 foot that can handle, up to 16 people. The 8 foots, 20 foots can handle 8 people. We have 22s that can handle 11 people.
Now, we've spent a lot of great time out on the lake in those pontoon boats over the years. I mean, you know, when Bob Evans was here, you know, we were going out all the time and having a good time. And it was some of our best memories.
Well, it's one of the best ways to see Summit County is from the middle of Lake Dillon.
It's so different when you're out on the lake.
I agree. And it you know, as busy as Summit County can feel, when you get out there, you're just absolutely in
another world.
You are in another world, and it's just you're just looking at nature and seeing it from a different perspective. And sometimes it's just nice to get off the land. My preference is to do it on a sailboat, but I have no problem turning a key.
Yeah.
Also.
Now, you're going to be doing a little regatta sailboat racing this summer?
We are. Yeah, so, you know, we do the Dillon Yacht Club does the weekend regattas. So there's quite a few of those coming up. We're still going to do the Dillon Open, which is put on by the Yacht Club, but it's by the name. It's open to anyone, you know, non-members. So it brings a lot of sailors here. And then, as you know, I started that Thursday night series.
The Beer Can Regatta.
The Beer Can Racing Series, which I don't know anybody listening, if you're a sailor, it's PHRF, so you could sail a cinder block, and if you sail it well, you might win. I got to say, hey, Patrick Dorsch, if you heard that, you basically do sail a cinder block. Yeah, it's PHRF. One of the fun things is no spinnakers. So the spinnakers, you know, those big colorful sails,
right,
when then you see a sailboat heading downwind or whatever, pretty
much
downwind.
It's the big puffy sail in front.
It is.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, can't have those.
Nope, because I'm trying to hamstring all the really competitive sailors to bring in more of the cruising sailors. And it's worked out really well. So the hyper-competitive don't get to use their afterburners, which gives a chance for all these other sailors to actually have a chance.
That's cool.
To come in. Also, no one left on shore. So if people show up here and they want to learn how to sail, we so far successfully have put everyone on a sailboat.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's... The fun thing about that is, you know, the Thursday night series at the end of the year, this year, like there's no glass trophies, there's no, you know, silver bowls. This year the awards were Etch-a-Sketches.
Yeah.
So I bought Target out of Etch-a-Sketches, and then we all got together for a celebration at the end, and the top three in both categories all got an Etch-a-Sketch. And we went down to one final champion of the Thursday night series. They had 10 minutes to get it out of the packaging, familiarize themselves with an Etch-a-Sketch again, which I don't know about you, but
it's been a while.
I love them.
Yeah. And the winner in the end, although some of them were quite amazing, like almost an incredible sketch of like a tall ship. And then there was someone else who did like a 2-scale diagram of the marina and all the slips and everything.
Jeez.
But ultimately, the winner was a depiction of someone's right hand using their middle finger to call someone number one.
All is done on an Etch-a-Sketch.
The hardest thing to do on an Etch-a-Sketch is make a circle. It's tricky.
It's super tricky.
It can be done.
It can be done.
Yeah.
It can be done, but you have to really know how to coordinate everything to make it go in a circle.
It's kind of like flying a drone with sticks.
Well, you're good at that.
Yeah.
I learned that on Etch-A-Sketch.
Well, they still sell them.
Yeah, wow. Well, until you buy them out.
Oh, no, they've restocked.
Okay,
I checked.
Very good.
We've got it. My stepson's girlfriend just had surgery on her broken ankle, and Lisa was saying, what should we get her? I said, an Etch-A-Sketch.
Absolutely.
Sounds kind of funny, because that was just yesterday's conversation.
Absolutely.
Talking about Etch-A-Sketch. Yeah, they're great.
Another really fun game is you got to put people in teams, but only one person knows what you're trying to draw. And so they have, like, 2 minutes to start, and they just hand it off, and the next person just has to guess. It's really fun.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Fun with Etch-A-Sketches.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
You're welcome, Hasbro, or whoever makes it. I'm not sure.
Well, really now, talk about the summer coming up and some of the plans. I mean, you're going to be involved with a little bit more than just the marina, working with the town of Dillon, getting things going, a new synergy with the Tiki Bar.
Yeah. So, obviously, the marina is a big focus. But, yeah, I'm really excited to be able to announce to listeners that Justin Slezak and his wife, Alyssa, who owned Steep Brewery in Keystone, have now been awarded the concessionaire agreement to run the Tiki Bar down here at Dillon. And I've spent a lot of time with them. They're very excited. I'm very excited. I think they're going to do a great job. They're talking about doing a signature Dillon beer, which is cool.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah, that we actually get to participate in.
The taste testing?
Hopefully. But actually,
does that mean you get to go stick your toe in the vat or something? You get a little local flavor?
Something like that.
Whatever they want to do to me, it's fine with me. But yeah, they've got plans in place. They're going to do improvements down here. Some really nice improvements down here. And we're looking forward to working with these guys, and they're going to be around for a long time. And the other thing, Mr. Little Bird, is that we're talking about trying to have a lot more music down here at the Tiki Bar. So as you know, we're in very close proximity to the amphitheater. So there's a lot of opportunity for people that are going to these wonderful shows at the amphitheater to come here, get parking, come on down, pregame a little bit. And we're talking about whatever the schedule works out to be, twice a month, once a week. I don't know, but maybe working.
It's kind of picking around shows if we want. But
yeah.
What we're talking about, our kind of idea is to get Summit Musicians Relief Fund involved. And to participate in putting an actual stage.
Yep.
It's not going to be a big deal, but a cool stage that can work. And then have it the Summit Musicians Relief Fund stage.
Mm-hmm.
And since we scattered Arnie Green's ashes right here, we can put In Memory of Arnie J. Green on there. So I think that'd be really cool.
That is a great idea.
Yeah.
Now, talk about the boat that was here, that wooden boat that was a stage at one time.
Oh, the Boss.
Yeah.
The Boss is still in our offsite storage, and I don't own it, but I'm still trying to turn that thing back into a stage, bring it down here. I actually showed the new folks coming in that boat, and we'll see what happens.
All right.
That was a lot of fun.
That was.
It was a little tight for a 5-piece band, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not an ideal stage. It's just cool as hell.
It's certainly not ideal, but it is very cool. Yeah.
Yeah, your band played in that stage.
We did.
Yeah.
Yep. Fun ideas like that. But I think anyone who's been to the Tiki Bar, I think they're in for some nice improvements and some good beers and.
Yeah, they're talking about other improvements, too, which is really nice. That they put tents up with sides on it, so when it's inclement weather, you don't have to leave.
Yep, and that's all in process, and I'm that's a huge focus of mine.
That'd be really cool.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, instead of the tents becoming a wind tunnel,
right?
You could actually duck in under them and keep having fun.
Yeah.
And then you could sit in there and watch me go out and rescue whatever.
Whomever.
Yeah, I'll be the guy that looks like me plucking people out.
Well, we've seen you do that before.
How much of that do you have to do, rescues?
The weather here tends to, we get that, the all that afternoon heat coming from the western slope and the eastern slope and south and north, and so generally between the hours of like 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock, we're probably going to have some kind of release. It's going to be in the form of wind, maybe some rain, but it normally only lasts like 20 to 40 minutes and then it's out. But during that time, we do get people that are caught by surprise.
I've been sailing at that time when the wind comes from three different directions.
Yeah.
One right after the other.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no rhyme or reason. It's almost like you're in a thermal. Mm-hmm. And it just starts to come from every direction. It's really kind of harrowing.
Harrowing is a great word for it. You better have a tight grip on your beer.
Yep.
Hopefully you've made some good decisions, as you can see that stuff coming over the Gore Range and the 10 mile. And then I always describe it as we're kind of nature's rest stop. So as she fights her way over the 10 mile and the Gore Range, she hits this valley and has to go to the bathroom. And then her next journey is up the divide. And then she backs up on us and she's like, I'm sorry, we're going to go to the bathroom one more time. And then it makes it over and it does whatever it's going to do to Denver, Colorado Springs, Boulder, all those places.
We've seen snowstorms get trapped in here like that when we get those big dumps.
Yeah.
It comes in and it just gets stuck.
Yeah, they got to lose some weight.
Yep,
lose a little weight.
And those can be some really good ski days.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hopefully we'll get one or two of those before this
season. You remember what that was like, Tom?
Good ski days?
Back when you were younger?
Oh, man. and my knees were a lot more less shaky.
So I got to go back for a second. You were here before the reservoir.
Oh, yeah.
You're old.
I'm 75 years old.
Dear man. Wow.
And how many consecutive seasons at Arapahoe Basin?
It's my 72nd consecutive season at Arapahoe Basin this year.
He's been skiing a long time.
Yep. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And a lot of changes. I actually skied at Loveland longer. I skied Loveland when I was only two. So it would be 73 years at Loveland. But I didn't ski Loveland every single year.
Right.
Because when I was on the road traveling a lot, I would sometimes... It was hard for me to get here except in the spring, and I just go to the basin, right? Because they were the only ones open. But it was my home. It's where it's where I love to ski, and it's always been kind of my home base. And 72 consecutive seasons.
Nice job, man.
Yeah.
You still act like you're 25.
29, but I lie about my age.
Okay.
Until we start riding up the chairlift together, then we're both 12.
Yeah, I have a time. It's like a time machine when I get to the base, and Tom and I become teenagers when we're on skis together. It's kind of crazy.
Well, I've always said the best time of life was right in between 7th and 8th grade. Like, you were young enough to do really stupid things. But you're old enough that your parents would let you do it.
Yeah. I always said 12 was the perfect age because you're not a teenager yet.
Yeah.
So you're still a kid. And Santa Claus still brought you stuff. You're 12, right? And
yeah.
But you're old enough where you can get in some real trouble.
Yeah.
You know, but you're young enough that you don't get in big trouble because you're still just a stupid kid.
Yeah.
So
is 12 too old to go trick-or-treating?
No, no, shit, God, no.
No.
Good.
Yeah. Not at all.
All right.
No, 12 was, that's when you'd take a pillow sack.
Because I think that was the last
year. You know, pillowcase, and you just see how many blocks you could hit.
Yep.
And you didn't
13,
come back till that thing weighed 30 pounds, you know. And then you'd eat so much sugar that night that, you know, couldn't sleep and feel like shit the next day. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your parents would let you do it.
Absolutely.
They weren't saying, you've already had 40 candy bars, you know.
No, they just wanted you to do something.
Yeah.
Did your parents ever mess with you at Halloween?
Oh, yeah.
My parents had a pretty good sense of humor, my dad in particular. So, yes, they would.
When I remember when I was a little guy, you know, my dad was the art director for AT&T. And they called him Chief. And he was a great guy, super talented, genius artist. But his staff was very devoted to him. And so I couldn't have been more than maybe four. So my brother and sister are already teenagers, right? You know. So they're much older, and they're out doing their Halloween thing. And I'm home with my parents. And, you know, a four-year-old, you just treat around the neighborhood and come back, right? You know, and all of a sudden, these adults show up in these horrendous outfits, witches and werewolves and Frankenstein, and they come in and start chasing me around the house.
Oh, jeez.
I was scared out of my mind, man. I was trying to hide, and they'd find me, and the witch especially was, you know, and I was, that was, and my dad would just laugh, and he thought that was the funniest thing he'd ever seen.
Picking on kids. Well, the latest trend that I saw this last Halloween, it's a thing where the parents have to put it all on video. So they get their phones out. They're shooting the video of the kids the next morning looking at the their Halloween stash is gone. And the kids are looking at the parents. What happened? It's like, oh, we threw it all away. And the kids just start bawling. Meanwhile, you know, the parents got the phone right and were filming the kid bawling. And they think that's so damn funny. Let's post it to TikTok. So that was the TikTok trend, people, parents pranking their kids. I thought, that's just cruel.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you're going to put all the time into raising kids and keeping them alive, and, I mean, you get to mess with them every now and
yeah,
then.
Yeah,
yeah. I did the my daughters and a bunch of their girlfriends were watching a scary movie, and there's a window right outside the house. And so I like snuck away, and we had this white mask. I don't even remember what it was, but I kind of put it on a stick and then just raised it up to the window. It took a little bit, but
someone saw it.
Oh, those girls moved pretty quick.
You know, my dad was born in Silver Plume in 1899.
And
he told us when he was a teenager, you know, Silver Plume was becoming a ghost town. So they had the house in Silver Plume, and the train still ran back and forth from Denver to Silver Plume. So they had a house in Denver as well. But, boy, the things they used to do. So one, they would take flat nails and stick them in the siding of a frame house where they knew it was an open wall, where there's no windows, right, where there's, you know. And then pull a string on there and rosin, use a violin bow rosin, and it would start a vibration, start making the house vibrate.
Yeah. Wow.
And then when the people would come out, they'd just yank the nail out and split. And the other thing that they would do is gates back in those days were just on a peg hinge. You just set the gate down on a peg hinge, uh-huh. Right? Yeah. They'd steal the gates and throw them up over the telegraph poles. And
that was before they had TikTok to record.
Oh, yeah. They didn't even have telephones back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty, you know, my dad telling me stories like that, you know, anything went for me. I mean, he was.
It's almost like giving you permission.
Right. Oh, he made me an M80 cannon.
Ah, man, that's a good dad.
Yeah.
That's a good dad.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, might as well oversee your son handling explosives as opposed to letting him go off on his own. Lord knows what he's going to do on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got the idea that I was going to build a crossbow, so he helped me.
Yeah.
There you go.
Uh-huh. What are you going to use for the bow? You know, I'm going to make it out of wood. Nah, let's go get an old umbrella because those are all spring steel. And so, and there's three different lengths of them. So we made a bow out of spring steel.
Jeez.
It was a powerful little crossbow.
Oh, bet it was. Yeah. That was going to be my question.
And how much destruction did you cause before you had to have it taken away?
I'm not going to talk about it on the podcast. Someday when we're at the bar drinking, I'll tell you what I did with it. But he condoned it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It was.
I was going to say, yeah, you probably shouldn't answer that question.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Has the statute of limitations hasn't run out yet?
Yeah, because that was like 1957.
Yeah.
So
we got to wait another decade.
Well, that was the coolest thing about my dad is he knew everybody up here because he was raised up here, you know, and he was an artist and they all knew him. And there used to be a diner in the old town of Dillon. And for some reason, I've never been able to find photographs of it. I thought it was called Cook's Diner. Hmm. And I don't know why, but the woman who owned it was Mrs. Cook. That's what I remember. And she was the cook, and that just imprinted on me. But she made the best apple pie you've ever had in your life. So my dad and I'd be up here, and he'd be painting, you know, and we'd take these hikes and would hike. We knew every trail up here. And we'd go to Cook's Diners for apple pie before we went home. And, you know, apple pie, you'd put ice cream on apple pie, right? My dad should put cheddar cheese.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen that.
Apple pie without cheese is like a hug without a squeeze.
Well, when I was a kid, I thought that was the fastest way to ruin a piece of apple pie. It's like, that's supposed to be ice cream, not cheese.
I do admit it. The first time I saw it, I was aghast. Like, right, exactly. It's supposed to be ice cream.
Yeah.
Cheese on that?
And it didn't even look appetizing. The piece of melted yellow cheese.
It actually tastes pretty good.
Oh, God. What do you eat now? You know, cheese and apples,
yeah,
right? You know,
right?
You get a little cheese and apples. Uh-huh. Fabulous. But first time I tasted it, I was maybe in my 20s. It was like, oh, I get it.
Yeah. Yep.
This is really delicious. I have a lot of memories. We watched them blow up some of the old houses.
Oh, yeah.
They dynamited them.
Wow.
And then scooped them up into trucks and took them out.
Yep. Have you ever read a quick read, a book called Dillon and the Dillon Dam?
No, but I haven't. I'll have to get that.
Yeah, well, I can loan it to you. It's a quick read. It's incredible, the story of it. I mean, way back in 1904,
right?
They conceived this reservoir project with, you know, the snowfall that we get normally. It was conceived all the way back then. And then a couple wars got in the way.
Well, yeah, but then the Denver Water really didn't pay people what their property was worth either. That's a big contention.
Yeah, I think when you read the book, you can definitely sense that there's still some
hostility.
Hostility.
Animosity.
I do have to say, though, modern Denver Water, they're actually, in my experience, they're great to work with.
Oh, that's good.
So, you know,
good.
I wasn't around in those days. And yeah, this book makes it pretty clear there were a few people that were quite upset.
Yeah, yeah, there was more than a few.
The general
prognosis was that it wasn't a good deal.
No, there was a video that Summit Historical Society put together, and I think you can find that on YouTube, just about the building of the Dillon Dam and the whole process.
I've seen that, and you know, I remember when they were moving the schoolhouse, on the truck,
right,
you know.
Right.
And you know what's really cool, and you guys will have to come and join us on a Thursday night, is we're playing the old Dillon Inn. We're playing Thursday nights at the old Dillon Inn. It's open again.
That's awesome.
It's the Leon Little Bird Trio.
Heck yeah.
Every Thursday.
Who's the third in the trio?
David Scott is his name. Fabulous guitar player and dobro player and good singer.
Sweet.
And so we're doing real fat three-part harmonies, and he and I play really well together. You know, there's some musicians you just click with, and he and I click.
That's awesome.
We're seamless.
That's cool. I will definitely come down there. I almost went. I haven't been there since it reopened.
Yeah. Well, and the food's really good.
I've heard that.
And, you know, it's Michael and Joyce who own Bread and Salt and Bagali's. And
I've heard that, too.
You know, and they're such good people. You know, it's a local deal, and we've been packing it on Thursday. So come on down. We're having a lot of fun.
I would absolutely love to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When do we get to see Craig Simpson's band play again?
I am not exactly sure. We were supposed to do one last Friday, but unfortunately due to some family stuff, not with me, but another member of the band we pulled out of that show. That was going to be at Highside in Frisco, right? Highside?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They would like us to come back, but I don't exactly know the schedule. I hope soon.
Yeah.
I would really like to do it.
Well, I know Kurt at Highside is a big fan of local music and promoting local music, and he does a bunch of free shows there, and he brings up some Denver talent once in a while. So, but promoting local talent, that's what he's all about.
Yeah. And he was so nice. He was, I've kind of known him, but I was really impressed because, you know, unfortunately, one of our guitarists, his father passed away, so we couldn't. You know, we're not going to do the show.
Yeah.
And Kurt was so understanding. He's like, no problem. So yeah, we had to back out, but we'll be back.
He'll have you back. What's the name of your band?
Highline Express.
Highline Express.
Named after the train that used to come through here.
Oh yeah.
Yep. So, Highline Express, and we kind of flex up and down, but we've got. The only thing we're missing is brass. We have a heck of a harp player, some great leads, a really great bassist, drummer. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I love it.
Well, as long as you're having fun, that's what it's all about.
Well, if you're having fun, then your audience is having fun.
Yeah.
Even if, you know the little mistakes that you're making, they don't know that. They're having a great time.
No, they think you're doing a little improvisation and making it your own.
Exactly.
It's your own little signature sound.
Yeah.
Leon does that all the time.
Yeah.
Well, not all the time.
It's great. And our set list, we're all over the place. Grateful Dead to Britney Spears and everything in between.
Somebody asked us the other day, do you do any Britney Spears? I said, are you kidding? Is that a joke? Am I supposed to laugh?
Well, Craig's band does.
Yeah. Well, I know, but he's got five-piece band and all kinds of people.
We're doing
original music and John Prine and Johnny Cash.
You're also really good.
We are really good. Yeah.
You are.
We got to play open at the Smurf concert, at the Silverthorn Pavilion for Carrie Morn and Ghost Dog. And so Patrick O'Halloran does such a great job mixing sound. So there you are on stage with a great sound system and a great sound engineer, and we killed it.
Yes.
Because we could hear everything, and it was awesome.
That's so cool.
It was the best.
That was a great fundraiser. A fun
great
time.
Fundraiser, yeah.
Benefiting the Summit Musicians Relief Fund, and hopefully we'll have a stage bearing that name at the Dillon Marina this summer.
I can't wait.
Oh, that'd be so awesome.
I honestly can't think of any good reason why not.
Yeah, cool.
Everyone thinks it's a good idea. The town thinks it's a good idea. The new concessionaires thinks it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. Like I said, the only caveat is I get to play it at least once.
We'll work on that.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, we can, raise some money for Smurf or maybe some local nonprofits, or we can figure that out. But
oh yeah,
it's such a wonderful place to for people to come and enjoy music, and then again, the fact that we're right down the road from the amphitheater, so if show up early and have a great time down here, and then. Quick walk up to the amphitheater, go see some of the amazing artists that are up there, and just put together a really awesome day.
And this is some of the best parking for the amphitheater, so when people come, if they hear music, they're going to come down.
That's the idea.
Instead of just walking over, waiting over there, they'll come here.
Yeah, and this helps get the word out, but as the word gets out, I think it might be really popular with anybody that loves music. Is going to be like, hey, we got to show up early.
Yeah.
They're doing a show at the Tiki Bar before we go and see whoever at the amphitheater.
And we could promote it that way, too, because we could look at the schedule and figure out who would be kind of like the right people to have, and it'd be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Could probably even promote that on the local radio station.
Do you know anybody at this station?
I think it's, what, Crystal 93?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
I've heard of it.
I've met a guy that works there.
Have you?
I have.
Oh, wow. That's pretty special.
Didn't they have, like, a really cool thing called the Snow Show for
they
11
did.
Years?
They did. Yes, yeah. I remember that. And a couple of cool dudes that hosted that show, and they'd occasionally...
It's called Skiing, Not Standing.
Those guys. Yeah. Well, Craig, the season's not over yet. A-Basin's going to be open into the springtime. Maybe not as late as usual, but
not till July 4th.
No, definitely not this year. We should get up and make some turns.
I'd love to. And my fingers are still crossed that it's gonna snow. It might be May, but it's going to snow.
Hey, we've had the month of Mayuary before.
We have. And we need it. We need it for so many different reasons. I was gonna say this. Okay, so if you live in Colorado and you're listening to this, I'm going to hit them where it hurts. Hey, Colorado, no water, no beer.
Oh, man.
I know, right?
I'm so bummed out now.
That'll get them going. So,
how many microbreweries will go out of business if we have a severe drought?
I hope not a single one of them. But,
could be disastrous.
No water, no water, no beer. So let's be careful about what we do with our water.
Rocky Mountain spring water, baby.
Yeah. Nothing like it.
You guys should take a show. You should take the Dillon Dam tour.
Okay.
I don't know why I just thought of that. I can hook you up with the guy that does that.
Who does that tour?
It's either a guy named Rick or a guy named Mason.
Is it Denver Water?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
They shut it down for a while, but we took it. You actually ride the elevator to the bottom of the Dillon Dam.
That'd be cool. We got to do that.
That'd be fun.
It's as cool as it sounds.
We might have to take some video, too. Or do they not allow that? Is it sensitive property? They don't want video?
I think there were certain things they didn't want video of, but no, they let us take some. And,
all right.
And, I can hook you guys up.
Oh, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. It's,
I remember when we were watching him build it, you know, it was...
Mm-hmm. Well, you take an elevator down, and you're literally standing at the base of the dam, inside the dam.
Inside.
Wow.
And there's a little hydroelectric plant in there, too.
We took a tour of that as well.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. But all the diversions and everything are down there, and then it makes its way to the hydroelectric plant, then makes its way into the Blue River. But it was pretty cool. But snow equals water. Water equals reservoir. Reservoir equals Denver. This one. Denver equals beer.
It all comes down to beer.
It all
beer.
Comes down to beer.
Yep.
Beer.
Yep.
I love it. Well, let's hope for the best for what remains of this season. Yep. Craig, thanks for joining us on the Colorado Snow Show.
I've really enjoyed it. I had have the privilege of knowing you guys for a long time now. So thanks for coming up to the shop. And
Thanks for having us here. And let's keep our fingers crossed we get to go actually make some turns together this year.
Okay.
That'd
Copy
be fun.
That. Yeah. That'd be
let's
great.
Plan on
you
it.
Can pick me up on your way down.
Okay. I might have to ride piggyback on you for a little bit.
I can still go every other turn to the left.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every other
cool.
turn.